Prince Bligel by Andrew Lang, Chapter 17, The Black Cat and the Brethren. Who was glad to see the prince, if it was not Lady Rosalind? The white roses of her cheeks turned to red roses in a moment, and then back to white again. They were so alarmed at the change. So the two went into the gardens together, and talked about a number of things, but at last the prince told her that, before 3 days were over, all would be well, or all would be over with him. For either he would have brought his brothers back, sound and well, to Falkenstein, or he would not survive his dishonor. "It is no more than right," he said, "for had I gone first, neither of them would have been sent to meet the monster after I had fallen. And I should have fallen, dear Rosalind, if I had faced the Firedrake before I knew you." Then, when she asked him why, and what good she had done him, he told her all the story, and how, before he fell in love with her, he didn't believe in fairies, or firedrakes, or caps of darkness, or anything nice and impossible, but only in horrid, useless facts, and chemistry, and geology, and arithmetic, and mathematics, and even political economy. And the firedrake would have made the mouthful of him, then. So she was delighted when she heard this, almost as much delighted as she was afraid that he might fail in the most difficult adventure. For it was one thing to egg on a remora to kill a firedrake, and quite another to find the princes if they were alive, and restore them if they were dead. But the prince said he had his plan, and he stayed that night at the ambassador's. Next morning he rose very early before anyone else was up, that he might not have to say good-bye to Lady Rosalind. Then he flew in a moment to the old, lonely castle where nobody went for fear of ghosts ever since the court retired to Falkenstein. How still it was, how deserted, not a sign of life, and yet the prince was looking everywhere for some living thing. He hunted the castle through in vain, and then went out to the stable yard, but all the dogs, of course, had been taken away, and the farmers had offered homes to the poultry. At last, stretched at full length in a sunny place, the prince found a very old, half-blind, miserable cat. The poor creature was lean, and its fur had fallen off in patches. It could no longer catch birds, nor even mice, and there was nobody to give it milk. But cats do not look far into the future, and this old black cat, Frank was his name, had got a breakfast somehow and was happy in the sun. The prince stood and looked at him pityingly, and he thought that even a sick old cat was, in some ways, happier than most men. "Well," said the prince at last, "he could not live long anyway, and it must be done. He will feel nothing." Then he drew the sword of sharpness, and with one turn of his wrist cut the cat's head off clean. It did not at once change into a beautiful young lady, as perhaps you expect. No, that was improbable, and as the prince was in love already, that would have been vastly inconvenient. The dead cat lay there like any common cat. Then the prince built up a heap of straw with wood on it, and there he laid poor puss and set fire to the pile. Very soon there was nothing of old black Frank left but ashes. Then the prince ran upstairs to the fairy cupboard, his heart beating loudly with excitement. The sun was shining through the arrow-shot window. All the yellow motes were dancing in its rays. The light fell on the strange heaps of fairy things, talismans and spells. The prince hunted about here and there, and at last he discovered 6 ancient water vessels of black leather, each with a silver plate on it, and on the plate letters engraved. This was what was written on them: Aqua de Fonte Leonine, which means water from the Fountain of Lions. "Thank heaven," said the prince, "I thought they were sure to have brought it." Then he took one of the old black leather bottles and ran downstairs again to the place where he had burned the body of the poor old sick cat. He opened the bottle and poured a few drops of the water on the ashes and the dying embers. Up there sprang a tall, white flame of fire, waving like a tongue of light, and forth from the heap jumped the most beautiful, strong, funny black cat that ever was seen. It was Frank, as he had been in the vigor of his youth, and he knew the prince at once and rubbed him against him and purred. The prince lifted up Frank and kissed his nose for joy, and a bright tear rolled down on Frank's face and made him rub his nose with his paw in the most comical manner. Then the prince set him down, and he ran round and round after his tail, and lastly cocked his tail up and marched proudly after the prince into the castle. "Oh, Frank," said Prince Bligel, "no cat since the time of Puss in Boots was ever so well taken care of as you shall be. For if the fairy water from the Fountain of Lions can bring you back to life, why, there is a chance for Alfonso and Enrico." Then Prigil bustled about, got ready some cold luncheon from the storeroom, took all his fairy things that he was likely to need, sat down with them on the flying carpet, and wished himself at the mountain of the Fire Drake. "I have the king now," he said, "for if I can't find the ashes of my brothers, by Jove, I'll..." Do you know what he meant to do? If he could not find his brothers? Let every child guess. Off he flew, and there he was in a second, just beside poor Alfonso's garden engine. Then Prigil set a little heap of grey ashes beside the seeing a little heap of grey ashes beside the engine, watered them with the fairy water, and up jumped Alfonso, as jolly as ever, his sword in his hand. "Hello, Prigil," cried he, "are you come after the monster too? I've been asleep, and I had a kind of dream that he beat me." "But the pair of us will tackle him. How is Melinda?" "Prettier than ever," said Prigil, "but anxious about you, however." "About you. However, the Fire Drake's dead and done for, so never mind him. But I left Enrico somewhere about. Just you sit down and wait a minute till I fetch him." The prince said this because he did not wish Alfonso to know that he and Enrico had not quite the best of it in the affair with the monster. "All right, old fellow," said Alfonso. "But have you any luncheon with you? Never was so hungry in my life." Prince Prigil had thought of this, and he brought out some cold sausage, to which Alfonso was partial, and some bread, with which the younger prince expressed himself satisfied. Then Prigil went up the hill some way, first warning Alfonso not to sit on his carpet for fear of accidents like that which happened to Benson. In a hollow of the hill, sure enough, there was the sword of Enrico, the diamonds of the hilt gleaming in the sun, and there was the heap, a little heap of grey ashes. The prince poured a few drops of water on the fountain of lions on them, and up, of course, jumped Enrico, just as Alfonso had. "Sleepy old chap, are you, Enrico?" said the prince. "But come on, Alfonso will have finished the grub unless we look smart." So back they came in time to get their share of what was going, and they drank the Remora's very good health, when Prigil told them about the fight. But neither of them ever knew that they had been dead and done for, because Prigil invented a story that the mountain was enchanted, and that, as long as the Fire Drake lived, anyone who came there fell asleep. He did not tell them about the flying carpet, however, which of course did not much surprise them. Oh, he did tell them about the flying carpet, however, which of course did not much surprise them, because they had read all about it in the Arabian Nights and other historical works. "And now I'll show you fun," said Prigil, and he asked them both to take their seats on the carpet, and wished to be in the Valley of the Remora. There they were in a moment among the old knights whom, if you remember, the Remora had frozen into stone. There was quite a troop of them, in all sorts of armor, Greek and Roman, and knight templars like Front de Boeuf and Brian Dubois Gilbert, all of the brave warriors that had tried to fight the Remora since the world began. Then Prigil gave each of his brothers some of the water in their caps, and told them to go around pouring a drop or two on each frozen knight. And as they did it, lo and behold, each knight came alive with his horse and lifted his sword and shouted, "Long live Prince Prigil!" in Greek, Latin, Egyptian, French, German, and Spanish, all of which the prince perfectly understood and spoke like a native. So he marshaled them in order and sent them off to ride to Falkenstein and cry, "Prince Prigil is coming!" Off they went, the horses' hooves clattering, banners flying, sunshine glittering on the spear points. Off they rode to Falkenstein, and when the king saw them come galloping in, I can tell you he had no more notion of hanging Prigil.